Yeah. Is the industry going to die? No, it's not. But there is a significant risk that if we don't transform, we will simply run out of the workers necessary to construct the projects that our nation wants us to build. The next generation that's coming into our workforce, what they're telling us is they don't want to work long, inflexible hours in an industry that considers Excel spreadsheets to still be the height of technology. Forget productivity, forget the fact that we're now less productive than we were 30 years ago. Forget that. If for no other reason we have to change or we'll run out of workers.
Welcome back, team, to Built Different. I'm one of your co-hosts, Grant Hagen. Thank you all so much for tuning in here with us for episode 4. We hope you guys have been loving season 3. It's been really fun to get these new episodes out in front of y'all for this season. We have another great episode slated in here for you, this time with our friends Down Under. We got an opportunity to go down to Australia in Melbourne earlier this year and had a really great conversation with two friends that I think you're going to find a lot of heavy hitters and a lot of hot takes from. And John and Sumit. And so really excited to put this episode in front of you guys. One, it was just a really eye-opening experience to go down and really see just the built environment in another part of the world, literally across the world. And really, it was a great time to just really collaborate with them and hear kind of the challenges that they're going through down in that area that aren't too far from the challenges that we experience over here in the States. And so I'm really excited to get you guys in front of this episode to hopefully have some really fun takeaways. To that point, I wanted to just really bring up a few new things that we're doing this year. If you haven't caught into some of our trailers or other things that we posted out there, our live streams. So we are going to be doing a live stream here on Friday, September 15th. We are doing two of these really throughout the season 3 here, really just as an opportunity for you guys to engage with us, ask us questions, hear some thoughts and takeaways from some of these first episodes. One will be here in September and the other one will be closer towards the end of the season. And so there'll be more information about that. Wanted to put that in front of you before we got into the episode here. And the second is our Built Different download. If you haven't seen those are fun little LinkedIn newsletters that we've been trying to just summarize and do show recaps for some of these episodes. And really just a fun and easy way to digest. If you don't have time to listen in or even watch some of these episodes, really those are just kind of the heavy hitters and takeaways from those episodes for you guys to also stay engaged with some of the audience and folks that we brought in on the show. So without further ado, we want to get you guys into these episodes, this one in particular with John and Sumit. And so we hope you guys enjoy this episode. We will see you on the live stream Friday, September 15th, and we will see you guys again here soon. Take care. Welcome back to the Built Different podcast. This is really fun. My first time over in Australia and joined with two friends that one I've just gotten to meet and one I've gotten to spend a little bit of time with John and Sumit. And thank you guys for coming in. This is really exciting. We have a lot of fun stuff that we're going to cover and talk about. But one, just thank you guys for coming in and joining.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, great to have you. Have you had a chance to check out any kangaroos while you've been here?
I haven't. I've slowly been realizing how much is backwards from my normal in Australia. Not only even the small things of like a revolving door, like we go into the right and you guys go into the left. So the small things that you
metric imperial.
Yeah, really yeah. Well. I mean
talk
that
about
that,
some of that stuff.
Yeah. That I'm not as concerned about. It's the normals of life. I got in the cab coming here to the event and quickly realized, wow, I have not at all experienced in having a driver on the right-hand side, which has been fun. But all things to say, we're going to talk about some really fun things on this episode around just this idea of what does it look like to get buy-in at an executive level. John, one, first before we get into the actual conversation, would love for you guys to give a little background of who you are. Obviously, we're all the way across on the other side of the world, but have really been encouraged of just getting to know you guys through afar and then also here in the last couple of days. But would love to hear your guys' backgrounds real quick and then we'll get into some good stuff. Does that sound good? John, do you want to start us?
Yeah, sure. Look, I've been in the industry for over 30 years now and started out as a quantity surveyor. I know you probably don't have them in the States.
Quantity surveyor?
Quantity
okay,
surveyor.
Okay.
Cost manager, contracts manager, that sort of type of thing.
Okay.
I left the UK 25 years ago, went to the Middle East, had 10 years in the Middle East, just as the Middle East was starting to go nuts. And then came to Australia, where I've worked largely for main contractors or general contractors, as you would call them, in that sort of contracts and commercial space. And then more recently, after 30 years of contracts and commercial, which is, as you probably know, it's all about this all of the time. It's highly adversarial. I wanted to do something a little bit more positive. And that's when I got into the advocacy space, where I now am as the CEO of the Australian Constructors Association, who are the association looks after the interests of the major contractors in Australia that construct together over 90% of all infrastructure in the country.
Awesome. I have a very similar correlation to an organization over in the States called AGC, which is Associated General Contractors. And so have worked with them all the way up through school and obviously post-school into the career. But thank you for that quick intro, Sumit.
Yeah, look, not too much to say, to be honest. So I had an interesting sort of policy role, worked in government in a bit of an economics role, and saw an obscure role in an obscure association, and joined the association, which was AMCA.
Okay.
And then I was fortunate enough to become the executive director, so akin to John's position. And the last couple of years, I've been with Autodesk in our construction strategy practice. So yeah, it's a very unique position we're in.
And where are you from? Here, obviously local in Melbourne.
Yeah, Melbourne, Australia, to all our listeners out in the US. So lived and born and raised in Melbourne.
And John, where you were from UK?
Yeah, originally from the northeast of England, yeah.
Okay, and you came over to Australia to start your career?
No, I actually started out my career in the UK.
Okay.
I left when I was 26, so I've now actually been longer away than I actually ever lived in the UK.
So more of an Australian now.
Okay.
More of an Australian, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Even got into Aussie rules now. So.
Oh.
Yeah.
We were talking earlier about just this idea of how construction in the last 20 years has really had these innovation leaps because of looking at other industries.
Yep.
And the question really begs of, hopefully one day, other industries will look at construction and say, hey, what are they doing? Like, why are they setting the pace? And we've all seen the productivity graphs and the things that, you know, highlight that. But I think that's a fair aspirational goal, right?
So this week we had our updated strategy day as ACA. And what we have recently agreed on as a 10-year strategy for the association is, we want to see our industry transformed within 10 years to exactly what you've just said, an industry that others' industries point to as being best case.
I wasn't even in that meeting, so that's... No, it's true, and we'll get into some words like transformation, because that's what we were talking a little bit about earlier, and what that means, and that's it's a broad word that means a lot to a lot of people. But one last thing I want to ask, and then I'm curious to get your thoughts on a few things, is... Tell me about this idea of the kind of quote theme of the event. You know, you walk around and see a lot of signs that say time for change. How did that come about? What's the hope with that kind of call for action? Because, I mean, you talk to, hey, we know what the problems are. We have a really good idea of the solutions, maybe not to all of them, but we can start somewhere. But we got to start. Like, we have to go and do, which I think gets lost sometimes.
Yeah, and I think that we have reached a point. So we published a report at the end of last year called Disrupt or Die. And that sounds, you know, that's a very sort of melodramatic title.
Yeah, I picked up on that, and that's why I did Transform and Prosper, but anyway.
But
both great terms, maybe a little different calls to action.
But at the end of the day...
You've got to put something out there too.
Right.
You've got to
shake the feathers a little bit.
Yeah,
Come on.
Yeah, that's right. But what do we actually mean by that? Is the industry going to die? No, it's not. But there is a significant risk that if we don't transform, we will simply run out of the workers necessary to construct the projects, the infrastructure that our nation wants us to build. We've seen, and we purposefully, these last 2 days, have had presentations and videos highlighting the views of Gen Z. So this is the next generation that's coming into our workforce. And what they're telling us is they don't want to work long, inflexible hours in an industry that considers Excel spreadsheets to still be the height of technology and that doesn't care about the impact that it's having on the environment. So if for no other reason alone, I mean, forget productivity, forget the fact that we're now less productive than we were 30 years ago, which is a pretty big deal. But forget that. If for no other reason we have to change or run out of workers, it's as simple as that. And I think the simplification of that issue and creating that or highlighting that burning platform is what has really brought those people together in that room. That is a concept that everyone can understand, and it's a concept that everyone is seeing. Whether you're working for a government and in a government delivery agency, they can't find the people. If you're working for a head contractor, they can't find the people. So we all recognize that this is a problem that we have, and therefore, if for no other reason, we need to do something.
You know, a thought that comes to mind is urgency is contagious.
Mm,
you know,
absolutely.
I mean, you come from industry of being on a job, and the job is closing to an end, and the urgency...
Was he urgent getting away from that sewer? There's a photo of you there.
Oh my gosh, that was, yeah. For the folks listening, there was some great pictures highlighting John at the keynote here, which was
where
great.
Was that in Dubai?
My previous project. I've worked on some extremely glamorous projects in my time, including upgrading of the Abu Dhabi sewage pumping network. Yes,
urgency, a lot of forms. But in that point, though, urgency is something I think people can rally behind, right? And you talk about the importance of it, and that was honestly one of my favorite things I saw this week, was hearing from the generation that will carry the torch through many more years to come. And you hear it from them, not just in audio, but you see and feel the passion that they're saying that in, of like, oh,
yeah,
that's real. Like, that's not just...
When you hear that video, that video for me was really compelling.
And they were very articulate.
Absolutely.
Those young people, weren't they?
And if you're a Gen Z listening here, we hear you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we had one of the...
Must be all the TikTok videos that they're making.
We'll make these into some TikTok reels to say, we hear you, we hear you.
But there was a recent graduate from one of our members, and one of the questions was, would you recommend our industry to someone else? And they said, look, I think there's two people here. Person A, someone that likes walking their dog and going out for nice midweek meals, no. If you want to work long hours and make a lot of money, absolutely. But we need to transition our industry into a state where you can make money, you can have a good time solving problems, and you can still go and walk the dog and go out for nice midweek meals.
I think you think...
It's a great point. Interestingly, just having a little bit of a think about what you were saying, John, it's the piece around, you know, promoting this industry as an industry of first choice. Because there's so, you know, if we think about the opportunities that are happening in a variety of different sectors and hopefully gravitating, you know, individuals to see that there is a career pathway for them. So there is that position that they're coming in. And this is what your 10-year journey looks like in our organisation. This is the 10-year journey that looks like being associated with the ACA.
Mm.
And I think those are some of the things that often get missed. And that's where we get this competitive tension constantly where, you know, what are we sitting down with these young entrants and showing them that this is the future, and look at the great things. You're driven by net zero, you know, emissions. You want to be part of that quest of dealing with climate challenges that we have. So these are some of the things that they're going into the employers. What's your position on that? And if we can't enunciate that, then we're going to lose them straight away, because a lot of businesses are putting metrics around those things to achieve, and it means something to them. So
absolutely. Yep.
Yeah, I think what I have appreciated about organizations like AGC in the States, and also hearing a little bit more about ACA here, is just the idea that when you talk about cross-generational functions, I mean, bias here a little bit in construction, man, there's so many generations that work together when you think about the needs from a performance and just title on a job, on a construction project. I mean, I remember coming out of school and it's like, man, I'm working with someone that could retire in, you know, 2 or 3 years. And that was 4 or 5 generations across that. And I appreciate how ACA, AGC, these organizations are really highlighting that, and addressing is not the right word, but bringing it to the forefront of, hey, why would we not talk about that? Like, if we're not talking about it, it would kind of show that maybe we don't have an understanding of what our cross-section of our industry is and how we best serve them.
It's pretty powerful when your major competitors are in a room and all pushing forward that this is where our industry needs to be. I think that's fantastic endorsement with what you said, John, because it's very hard to get competitors to agree on these sort of long-term things because their project pressures and the way they're drilled and the way they're organized. And
we just brushed over that everyone's here and they're like, yes, I agree with you. And that's not normal. Nor are there maybe events that enable that to be normal. Hmm. That's the other reality of, I think, why organizations like you guys are really promoting that and not just talking the talk, but like, hey, come and experience it. Like, you may have heard about what this FCON event is and why it's important, but hey, come and see, almost.
Absolutely. And without giving too much away in my wrap-up speech later on.
Please do. The floor is...
Don't worry, this is going to be released before. We're going to actually play this when you're standing up on the stage or something.
But given that we have such strong agreement on these issues, my challenge to everyone leaving the event today is going to be each and every one of you can walk that talk. You, even if you just change one thing in how you operate, whether that is in a government delivery agency, as a contractor, as a lawyer, whatever that may be.
A technologist
even, yes. We all have the ability here to influence change and achieve the transformation of the industry that we all agree is absolutely necessary and completely desired. We can all play our part in that.
Yeah, well said. Great context, because I think that hopefully will give us a little bit of runway of some stuff I wanted to get into, and really what we had talked about is just, so you said day one, broad issues, right? Things that are kind of big picture of sorts, and in this day two, which we're in today, is just this idea of technology's impact on that, right? I mean, unfortunately, Gen Z probably gets a little bit too much rap of being the most technological advanced, you know, generation for a lot of great reasons, but I'm curious to know why maybe that kind of format of the event, how that played out, because obviously we're here representing a software company. Summit is here to represent a software company, and I'm curious how that's kind of played into the dynamic of making this event successful too.
That's a really good question. I think that essentially, it's important to identify in the first instance what are the key issues that we're trying to resolve and how some of those issues are interlinked. And once you have that clear picture of what it is, the problems that we've got, then you can start getting into solutions, which is obviously where technology has a big part to play. But also what it flushes out, because we already know by this stage that technology has a big part to play in resolving these issues, but also what are the impediments to the adoptions of that technology? Because what you see walking, it's great, you know, you walk around the halls here and the problem is not lack of technology. It's not lack of solutions. We've got plenty of solutions. Why are they not being adopted? You know, we had BIM came out, what was that now, 30 years ago. And yet there are still some clients where we heard about one story today where on the delivery side, the major transport infrastructure authority are doing all these this big infrastructure works, and they're using digital twins, and they're creating all this data that they then have to convert back to 2D drawings because the operational authorities don't have the capacity to deal with that. So these are the sort of the fundamental impediments to adoption of technology that we really need to focus on, because the problem is not finding digital solutions to this. It's why are those solutions that are already there not being adopted?
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, one of the things I was thinking about, John, when I was presenting, and I hope I got the message across, was that we can tap into some of our networks within the organization and maybe keep it at a bit arm's length, that it's not that, oh, this software can sort out all your problems. Let's talk about some of those change management processes that you're trying to achieve. What are some of those business outcomes that you're trying to achieve? And actually getting someone to facilitate that and bring it out together and go, okay, for this particular area, these are some of the value drivers that you're trying to achieve. you know, how are you going to get there? What are those work? What are some of the capabilities that underpin those that you need to achieve? And how can the team orientate around achieving those? And what sort of structure do they need to support? And that's, you know, from my perspective, that's the offer that I'd love to put to you, John, is help finding the right person to facilitate sessions around that to support the association. I think that would be valuable.
I think what's some things that we've had on these episodes is, and I've been amazed at some of the answers to this question, like, what is the software's responsibility in this? Because you mentioned earlier...
To make it more confusing.
Clearly, right? But, I mean, it's an interesting question that I've gotten some really interesting responses, because you say, hey, there's clearly not a lack of software technology to apply to these tools, but I almost wonder, like, it's clear people don't start with problem statements. They don't start with how this is going to impact their business or what the needs of, quote unquote, the business are to be impacted by solutions like software, right? Like, is there anything on the software or technology side that we could or should be doing that would make that a little more effective, maybe? I'm trying to think if that's the right word to use there.
Yeah, I mean, that is a good question. You really got my brain going there. I think one of the impediments to adoption of technology is, and software in particular, a lot of these solutions are all focused on open and transparent sharing of information or leveraging information. And one of the issues that I think has been a barrier to adoption of that technology is that we contract still in a very adversarial way. And so information is considered to be important from the point of view of being able to be used to develop a claim from a contractor to a client, or to defend a claim from a client by a client from a contractor. And so when that data is being used for those means, then there is a real reluctance to share that data.
Opening up the kimono, I think they call it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know whether that... I probably haven't answered your question there, because I'm not sure.
No, I think you have. It's the procurement piece, which is very important. And the procurement piece is important because there could be opportunities... where in the US you talk about integrated project delivery, or we could call it earlier contractor involvement. You know, what's the incentive? How can I incentivize you to support me earlier in really coming up with something that's can be designed, can be constructed and operated differently? And what are those procurement opportunities before we start talking about the technology piece? Then we can start to bring the teams together and say, okay, you know, tier one contractor that's going to use all of these subcontractors, you come up with the best ideas and we'll position the arrangement accordingly. Obviously, you have to test the market, you have to price it, but at least they're starting to see some goodwill, that it's not going to be some hero project and then we do another six very average projects after it. So, yeah, I think you're right, John. Totally think the procurement piece is very important, and also trying to encourage some of the participants to come forward differently.
Yeah, that the note I wrote was like, when you have intention to use the data in a maybe malicious way, maybe that's not the best way to approach it. Meaning, like, I hope I can use this to better defend myself, or I hope I can use this to save my butt on something down.
It's like, that's right, yeah.
Hey, let's maybe take a pause here. Is that the best way to think about how these tools are helping you? Like, why don't we go to the source of some of these issues, that how contracts are written?
Yeah, look, absolutely. I think this is something that we... this is going to be a real challenge, actually. And it's something that I've been trying to give a bit of thought to, is we really need to fundamentally transform how our industry is valued. I did a LinkedIn post a few weeks ago now, where I compared the construction industry to the manufacturing industry, or more particularly manufacturing tins of beans, tins of baked beans, right? And I said, here we are as a construction.
There was quite a bit of traction on that post.
Like 200,000 views.
Wow.
Yeah, it was
sitting
it was,
across from a LinkedIn
influencer. Yeah, there we go.
I think the Gen Zs, they talk TikTok, so we have to get that on TikTok, I think.
So
get him off LinkedIn. Needs to get to the new platform, you know.
Skyrocket.
But the, you know, the point I was making here was that the construction industry is a highly skilled industry that solves complex problems every day. And yet it currently makes a return of 2-3% on the capital it employs. And yet, without trying to be too derogatory about manufacturing tins of beans, it's a pretty low risk industry. And yet when I check the latest figures for Heinz, you know, they're making 10% at that. Why is that? We need to get to a stage where our efforts are appropriately valued. And if we can get to that stage, then what we'll see a number of things. We'll see some of those defensive behaviors drop away, but we'll also see that these businesses, and this has come up on a few panels, when we look at the percentage of revenue that these construction companies are investing in R&D, it's minuscule.
Yeah, I think there's a global report, yeah. And it talks about 1.7%.
I was going to throw a number out, but it was going to be.
I think there is a report that was done by Deloitte. It was more IT focused, and it was something in that ballpark. I could be wrong, but I think it was around 1.7%.
But you ask yourself, you know, why is that? And I think it's pretty simple, basically. And again, it's melodramatic to say this, but the reality is that contractors are simply focused on staying alive. They're going from one project to the next. They might make a big loss on one project, so they go chasing the next project to recover as an opportunity to recover those losses. So you're constantly just focused on essentially trying to make some sort of return. And if you don't have that that stable return that a manufacturing industry has, are we surprised that there isn't so much investment?
It's a great point. And when you think about the global scenario that we've faced over the past 2 years with COVID, being in a position before that to win work and have it priced at a certain perspective and lock in supply chain and all of those things, to start deliver those projects a couple of years later, as you know, it does take time to win a job and then start commencing construction. And then you see the impact happening to those businesses now and the challenges that they have with price escalation and other things. So, you know, there's many, many aspects to it. And, you know, it's put the industry on a lot of challenges at the moment globally.
Yeah, this is a very random question. And are you saying tinder beans?
No, tins. Sorry, it might be the accent.
Tins? Baked beans. Have you had baked beans?
Cans.
Beans.
Sorry, cans.
I love that.
Cans of beans.
I was like, is he saying wood beams? Like timber?
Tin
beans.
Cans of beans.
It's a staple in the UK. Yeah. They have baked beans on toast.
Perfect. Yeah. Us Americans just call them baked beans, but I like tin beans.
But the just to round that one out as an interesting point, and it did get such a lot of traction, which was partly due to the fact that the people that are involved in manufacturing those baked beans jumped into the thread and got quite upset that I was potentially being derogatory to the manufacturing industry.
So, and then John West jumped in as well and said, hey, what are you talking about? Our tuna cans, we make 15%. No, I was joking.
Oh, wow. Man, that it hit the LinkedIn algorithms.
It did. And definitely did. Yeah.
But I think you talk about awareness, and it's even simple posts like that, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, you have your head down so much and you're focused so much on the survive or die. Maybe that's like the current state of the industry more than disrupt and die or die. And I think the challenge with that too is just like, hey, wake up. Like, hey, this is happening, whether you choose to look down and keep going or look up and actually start doing something around that. I love being able to correlate to other industries and just see what else is going on, because it helps. We were talking about this earlier. It just helps bring context, to things and almost like a color commentary of, huh, maybe that is right. And sometimes the analogies work and sometimes they break down and sometimes they hit the LinkedIn algorithm and it takes off, you know? But no, that's really interesting to think. And I had a colleague that mentioned a little bit more around the correlations to the shipbuilding industry. Like I think some people, I've heard at least some people kind of have challenges of equating construction to manufacturing for a whole host of factors. But then you look at maybe types of manufacturing like ship manufacturing. Now, this gentleman was from South Korea. Shipbuilding.
They build so quickly.
And just like, what can we learn from that industry alone? And things like control and things like reality capture and modeling and fabrication.
I think there's a really important point that you've hit on there is that we've hidden as an industry behind this excuse that we can't do all of this thing because every project's different. You know, there's no two projects are the same. We hide behind this. But the reality is that, yes, at the highest possible level, everything is different. But when you start to break it down into the component parts, how we pour concrete from one project to the next isn't different. How we erect steel from one project to the next isn't different. We are making excuses up.
Time for change.
Absolutely.
I mean, yeah, well said. And I kind of get chills thinking about the folks that I know that have said that. And it's like, man, okay, what is that really doing? It's really going back to the problem solutions do. Like, it's going back to the problems. Oh, we still have these problems. We're never going to solve them. It's like, no, there are solutions here. You can choose to embrace those, or you can just go through the cyclical loop of back to the problems and kind of hide behind it. Yeah, well said. One, I want to be cognizant of your time. I know that this is the hardest part.
You get him going, just maximize it. He's okay. It's only 2 o'clock. He can still go.
It's the hardest part of these because you get into such great conversation and it...
I promised you 10 minutes, didn't I?
Yeah.
Once you warm him up, he's ready to go.
It's really helpful to see because, John, you're in a unique role because you get to interact and interface with a lot of these executives across a lot of different companies and almost aggregate what you're kind of seeing as a part of these themes. I'm curious, maybe...
Are you familiar with the term herding cats?
Very much. We have a lot of cats in the States and a lot of cat herders in the States. But I'm curious, as you've seen some themes across these executive individuals that you've gotten to interact with, what would you say are some of the categories of maybe either lack of interest or the lack of desire to use technology to address some of these problems? Like, I think everyone has their own kind of preconceived notions of what may be going on, but you are in a unique position that you get to kind of see what's been bubbled up from a lot of these executive teams. Because, you know, the focus of these episodes that we've been releasing recently is really around this idea at the executive level of, hey, technology isn't going anywhere. And I hate to say it that way, but hey, what if we are that industry that people look to? Like, that is way more ambitious of a goal rather than like, I better use this because the Gen Zs are coming. And right, does that make sense? Like, I'm curious, as you see these themes, what themes stand out of just not wanting to embrace the idea of technology?
I think it's interesting that I think historically, if you look at the main area of technology, coming back to building information modeling again now, where there's been very much a view that the benefits with that accrue primarily to the client. This isn't a thing that I'm doing for me. This is a thing that I'm doing as a sell or something that the client has asked for. Yes, there might be something in this for me from a point of view of, I don't know, clash detection or whatever. But the ultimate benefit here is to the client in their ongoing operation and maintenance of the asset. There is a sort of growing realization now, and sorry, the other thing I should say, importantly as well, is the piecemeal nature of some of these digital solutions. The fact that you can get a solution for just picking someone out at random. Here we've got a software provider called Docketbook, so getting rid of paper dockets on sites, receipts on sites. And then there'll be another solution for something else, and another solution for something else niche.
Yeah.
And this has been resolved now. It's starting to be resolved now. And obviously,
it's a really good point. Because so, since, you know, if we think about from 2010 and to where we are in 2023, a real proliferation of point solutions, as John was...
Point solutions, that was the term I was looking for.
So if we think about the industry, you know, if you think of any use case, there was an offering, there is something. And as time has gone on, a lot of the strategists have been pushed by their customer base to say, well, that's not good enough anymore because we need to start to standardize on some of the aspects that John was mentioning. Mm. And we can't standardize on all of these point solutions, so what does it look like? So the conversation's now shifted to sort of this platform conversation, but enabling open API environment for others to participate in the ecosystem. And I think that's what we need to do. We need to support that.
I honestly think that that will be a game changer from an adoption perspective. I think that that has been a real barrier to date.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I think is going to change, I think the whole Gen Z thing is another driver for change because us old crusties recognize that they don't want to come in there and work off Excel spreadsheets.
That term crosses borders and crosses seas. I love that. Yeah. Keep going.
And so you're starting to see this confluence of reasons. And the other big one that we haven't really touched on today is the overall environmental sustainability piece.
And we did some work together last year on that, And I was very proud of the work that we did there. Do you remember what we did? Forgotten. It's been a long time since we've spoken about it.
But demonstrating the importance of technology and focusing on this issue of environmental sustainability, in that ultimately all of these issues that we're talking about are interlinked: culture, sustainability, digital productivity, and if we're looking at
data measurement,
sure.
Capabilities, skills, procurement, and it was a partnership piece with the ACA Infrastructure Sustainability Council and Consult Australia, and we were invited to be part of that conversation. And yeah, it turned out to be with a pretty good understanding of opportunities that can be explored, and we've got some ideas of how we could work together. But
interesting,
you know, obviously need some support from the greater industry for those things.
But from a, you know, where does technology fit into this? Technology is going to help us to become more efficient, to become more productive. What is productivity about? It's doing more with less. How is that important? That's an environmental benefit. If we're all about cutting out waste and doing more with less. So, you know, all of these things, it's really actually quite exciting at the minute because as I mentioned before, there is now this real coming together of views that and strong alignment that this is what we need to do for a whole bunch of reasons: productivity, environment, running out of people. We just need to get on and do it.
Yeah. I don't want to suggest this as your term for next year, your hashtag, as we've seen. A phrase I've heard and brought up on these episodes has been start simply and simply start. And I think people get overwhelmed by this idea that, well, where do I start or how do I start? It's like, just start simply and don't overthink it and don't overdo it.
Well, one of the key points that on a similar vein that I wrote down and will probably use it in my wrap up today is someone said, just have a crack.
Hmm.
It's a very Australian term.
Australian version of what you just said.
So if you think of a football match and the ball's there and it's muddy and one guy just, he doesn't want to get his jumper dirty or muddy, so he just holds back, and then the supporter base, John Davies at the back, goes, have a crack.
Have a crack.
Go and get the ball.
Go get it.
Yeah, that sort of thing.
Hey, I'm writing these terms down because my glossary, not only in construction, is now longer, but my Aussie glossary is even longer. And back to summarize a little bit of what I heard you say of kind of the why of some of that lack of excitement of using technology is like kind of this idea of what's in it for us.
Yeah.
And plenty. Like, there are plenty of things that are in it for you, and the contractual things do help, right? It's like, hey, like, if you have owners that are educated and they understand the value of the systems and tools that they're going to get to actually operate these buildings once they get handed over to them, like, we don't talk often enough about how we are just the start of these buildings living their life. Mm. And we often just think, oh, well, on to the next one. It's like, hey, if we are going to build a sustainable future, that means these buildings need to be sustainable. And not only that, but they need to have a way in which they can be operated sustainably as well. And that, what's in it for me? Well, if you care about your clients and you care about your buildings as much as you say you do in the project, hey, what about the 50 years or 100 years or 200 years they're going to operate that building and be in that building or have that be a part of, you know, their system? So I have one last question. I keep looking down because we are cresting 45 minutes, which I really do appreciate.
It's gone very quick.
Yeah, it has gone quick. But to maybe kind of land the plane of sorts and really maybe kind of to wrap up, I want to hear both of your guys' kind of calls to the individuals that you work with maybe the most. And obviously we get to go hear you here in a few hours of kind of the closing statements, but what would you want to say to folks that wouldn't be able to come to an event like this or don't know how they can get involved in an organization like ACA, like AGC, maybe back in the States? Like, what would you want to say to those individuals?
I'd want to say that we're all part of the problem historically, and therefore we're all part of the solution. It doesn't matter where you sit within our industry, everyone has a role to play. I'm fortunate in my role in being in a position to greatly influence outcomes in certain areas. But everyone, to a certain extent, has the ability to do that, especially in this day and age through social media. We put out a lot through LinkedIn, and it is incredibly important to see that engagement and get people talking about the issues and engaging in those issues. And the other thing that I challenge everyone is, challenge what you're seeing on a day-to-day basis. Don't accept that that is just how it is and it can never change. Really challenge that status quo. And it's only by doing that and everyone looking to make just a small change themselves that will all add up to the size of the change that we're all looking to see happen.
Well said.
Look, from my perspective, it's really being that trusted partner. And, you know, sure, we work in an organization that is driven by the quarter and financial performance. And, you know, we'll never move away from that. But I think we need a level of conversation at that position where there is a understanding that we actually want to help and support the industry. So the initiatives that I'm trying to be inclusive about is, doesn't matter, you know, what competitors are around the table, but how can we support and ultimately be seen as partnering appropriately? So focusing on some of those solutions, which I mentioned yesterday, whether they're technical, procedural, cultural, I think we've all got, you know, pockets of excellence within our own organization and our own networks to be able to facilitate those. And that can be small things. It could be, you know, facilitating study tours that are happening in the US and getting US contractors to speak to Australian contractors that aren't in a competitive space. And then they can have peer groups and talk about some of the challenges that they have, benchmarking challenges. Obviously, you've got to be very careful how you do all of these things, but just have a forum, a unique forum where these contractors feel a level of comfort and can start to open up and solution around some of the things that have been prevailing issues.
Yeah, and I think that hits well to your point you mentioned earlier, is just there is a lack of trust. And man, work or personal life, where there is a lack of trust, there is not going to be a lot of growth. Mm-hmm. And there's not going to be a lot of depth in a lot of ways. And yeah, well said. I mean, from the tech side of things, it's like we in a unique way have an opportunity to help embrace and enhance
because
trust.
We want to support the incumbents. And if the incumbent contractors aren't here tomorrow, where are they coming from? And that's, if they fail, we fail. The economy fails. It's a disaster. People don't want to work in our industry. That's not great.
Yeah.
So we do have a shared responsibility, but we can't be judgmental. We can't just say, oh, well, we're the technology. You should do this and you should look at manufacturing and look at all these sectors. We're being insulting. There are great things that are happening in the industry. We should highlight those and we should always challenge those. But I think it's a different, dynamic, unique way of engaging, and it's got to be long-term. So more than happy to work with John and his team, as always. And, you know, from my perspective, congratulations on a great event, and congratulations on a, you know, really clear policy platform, John and your team. So
yeah. Okay. Well, likewise, and I don't know if this is a more state-driven phrase, but it has definitely come up on a lot of these episodes, is just the rising tide rises all ships.
And absolutely.
It's hard to see that change over time. It's hard to see that, you know, when you're so interested of...
Or when the tide goes out, you see whether people are wearing bathers. That's another one. That's what contractors tell me as well. Have you heard that one, John?
Yep.
That's pretty good. Maybe I'll add that one to the list here too, but... It is true. It's you don't see that change over time until you reflect back and see, wow, man, look how far we have come. And oh, by the way, it wasn't just our ship. It's all of these ships that are in.
I think that's where initially with your policy direction and positioning, you were getting uniformity around those three areas first. And then from there, your program aligns to that. And it's a reinforcement. If you don't reinforce that message, then there is no message. And I think that's why they, ACA's, this is what we stand for. This is what we want. Mm-hmm. We want to represent the best businesses that are doing the best things by their people, who are their most important asset. And how do we provide opportunities? What does a 10-year career pathway look like for someone that's entering today?
Yeah.
How does that support the industry and beyond?
Well, what we got so excited about was, you know, the initiative of what we're trying to do through episodes and shows like this on Built Different is really that idea of a community that is obsessed with questioning the status quo. And clearly, you know, John, you've built that here within this event, but not only that, but ACA as well. And it is something that you want to find opportunities for more people to engage in these conversations and hear. And we are obviously clearly fortunate to be at an event like this to engage with that. But really the hope of these episodes is to take that even farther into people that have come across some of those same challenges and need to be encouraged in a way that they maybe not have an opportunity to come to these and maybe come to them in future opportunities. And so with that, one, thank you to both. This is, I feel more lucky to maybe host these opportunities and conversations, but it really is a treat, and we do appreciate you guys making the time. And we are mid-event getting John.
That's what he does. Wouldn't it be funny if we just kept him in this room for the rest of the afternoon?
Hey,
and then just played this.
I think that could work. We could see with the AV team if they could just hit run back and play on it. But no, it really is so great. Truly, we do appreciate the time.
Yeah, and thank pleasure. You. And generosity as well. John, yeah, appreciate it. And the partnership of this this event. You know, what I've loved about it is we've got very, very senior people who have actually walked around and introduced themselves and made it really personable. And that's an ornament to the industry. If you think about some of the businesses that these individuals are running, they've actually been accessible, and that's what we love about this event. It's great.
Yeah, and that doesn't happen by happenstance. It takes a ton of effort and intentionality, and that obviously comes on display in these events. So likewise, congratulations. It really is great, and I know you would say there's a huge team of people that, you know, help make that a possibility. And
Megan. Megan Anderson,
Megan, you got a shout out here. Now we haven't forgot you, but thank you to both. This is really great. Appreciate those that are listening in, and we hope that you had something that to start simply and simply start and really inspire the change in the individuals and teams and companies and projects that you're working on. So thank you for tuning in with us. We hope this was a fun and engaging conversation for those that are listening in or watching in, and we'll see you on the next episode. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us, and a safe journey back to Dallas.
Here we go. Let's head back home. Thank you, team. Appreciate it.
Cheers.
Make sure to subscribe to Built Different on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere you listen to podcasts. Let's build this community together.